love to call you back just as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
The mailbox is full and cannot accept any messages at this time. Goodbye.
Greetings to the automatically deleted husband. I obviously remain concerned about the mailbox being full now for over a month. I'm going to get myself in trouble in this call. So let's start with something lighter. I saw a comedy piece from J.P. Sears, The Regret of Non-Compliant People. And, you know, it was slightly better than average. It wasn't one of the best, but it was slightly better than average. But the one thing I really liked is the doctor. Doctor, what Nuremberg code? that was a great choice of name, because the Nuremberg code is the idea of you can't experiment on people without consent. And obviously vaccines have been basically experimenting on people without consent. But anyway, so I found that humorous. I did also wanted to mention, I saw a while back, I don't have a reference for it, but people may be familiar with Nigel Farage. He is a British politician. He represented them in the EU for a while and has been considered a possible candidate for, like, prime minister and things of that nature. But he's also has a lot of, especially because he conflicts with most of the powerful figures. So he's been pushed out and is kind of out. But apparently one of the things that pushed him out even further in recent days is his bank said, we're closing your account. And he went to other banks and they said no. So what apparently happens to a very powerful man in general, the banks won't deal with him, meaning he can't buy or sell. I don't know what's happened, but I just found that fascinating, because if they can do that to somebody that powerful, again, the guy down the street, if you're disliked, you're toast. So I found that interesting. I'm also going to leave Brian Berletic. He did a thing, Facebook targets Cambodian prime minister, a lesson on securing information space, because apparently Facebook has been doing a lot of things to censor the prime minister and of course various government officials within Cambodia. So it is political interference. Now, it's the question of the rightness or wrongness of the various people is one thing. The issue to look at is the influence of Facebook in the political realm, domestically and obviously in foreign countries. In the U.S., Cambodia, a lot of Americans, you ask them, where is Cambodia? You know, during the time when I was young and we had the Vietnam War going on, a lot of people knew more about Cambodia because you're virtually next door. But, you know, especially today, Cambodia? Where's Cambodia? But I find that fascinating, because one of the things we've got to remember, Facebook, Google, and InQtel are joined at the hip. Facebook is the company a lot of people know about. Google, well, a company a lot of people know about. Who's InQtel? InQtel. Who are they? It is basically a corporation that's owned by the government, specifically the CIA. And what do? They're the investment arm to invest into other corporations in order to bring to life things, technologies, and services that would be helpful for their tasks. And two of the companies that they were very much behind many years ago were Facebook and Google. And do you think the connection is no longer there? Sucker! Anyway. I also, now to something a bit more serious. I sent an email. I did my voicemail yesterday, which I invested a little time in. And it was kind of emotional for me to do. One little subtle point is after it was done and I had other things taken care of and it was time to go to bed. And I watched it one last time because that, you know, that was short. That was a 7-minute video. I watched it and I was sitting in the chair. I was sitting in the same chair I talked about that I was watching it and found the statement, "What if that is your daughter?" Which, by the way, I sent a postcard to Jim Cross today and stated, "That is your daughter." But that's a subject in its own. But anyway, I was sitting in the chair when I saw that, and I mentioned I broke down. I broke down in a different way last night, just before bed. It wasn't me that broke down. The chair broke. And the timing was remarkable because it was at the last moment where I repeated the, "What if it's your daughter?" And then I heard a loud snapping sound. And literally, the chair broke. There's the metal spring underneath that it's been kind of repaired. No, the chair is now defective. So it's the timing was just amazing. It's you know, humor like the Dr. What Nuremberg code. To me, it was kind of that kind of thing. But it also was kind of an interesting issue, is because, you know, I'm very conscious of the hospitality, phileos xenos, or however it's pronounced, a friend of strangers. And, you know, to be hospitable. And it's, I'm down to one chair. So I'm not very hospitable, which is a real problem. But anyway, the more serious stuff. Because that video had a little bit of an impact on me, I sent an email to a lot of people to mention it. And I've had interaction. Some of it was remarkably encouraging. But we'll see what comes from that. But there's also this article. Dan Fournier wrote an article, "Millions of children are being abducted and trafficked each year. The Sound of Freedom movie exposes the epidemic." And I have the link there for it. I recommend it. It is not light duty. It mentions the Sound of Freedom movie, but it's one of numerous points. This is a long article, very in-depth, very well sourced. So there's a whole lot of stuff to follow up on if you're seriously interested in the subject matter. So it was an excellent article. One of the things I think is very vital is you go to the end of the article. Again, long article, and at the end, he has a line. And most importantly, "Don't forget about all this in a few days. Keep at it." I thought that was very wise and very encouraging. I think that was remarkably good. So I leave you the link to the article, and I wrote a email to Mr. Fournier, and sent it to him, and it was fairly deep. And I think maybe I'll even include the text here today. But the because I described, you know, my understanding of the issue, my relationship to the issue, the Shofar Leaks project, why Shofar Leaks, you know, the relationship to specifically Collateral Murder, you know, Shofar Leaks, WikiLeaks, and various other aspects. And I even pointed him to the Promise site, yesterday's video, and so forth. So I went into some detail, and again, a fairly long email. Plus, afterwards, I said, okay, the Sound of Freedom movie is about a specific individual and an organization that he has subsequently formed. I sent that email to them. So I've gone directly to the people that the Sound of Freedom movie is about. And then I went to a whole bunch of people that I know, and I sent them a copy of that email. It's not fluff. But one of the issues, one of the fundamental points behind the design of Shofar Leaks is it's not to form an organization, but an ecosystem. What I mean by that is I'm not trying to have a single entity, but put in the ecosystem, the environment where lots of people are involved for their own self-interest, not dependent on each other, but collectively, not as a collective, but the collective forms an ecosystem. Therefore, there's not a single point of failure or of compromise. That's the objective. That is the fundamental objective. Because with an organization, you can compromise. With an ecosystem, it's a bit harder. And that is my objective. I'm striving to find others. And I hope that I spent all day on this. I didn't do software. And this is not what I'm supposed to be doing. But I have spent all day on this. My concern about the organization is intense. When I watched the trailer for Sound of Freedom, I caught something. And I said, oh, okay, I know what that is. And I let it go because I thought this is important, but I had other things to do. So I didn't let it go anymore. I have a snapshot, and it is on the page today. It's on my, where I have my information for Sound of Freedom. Because you're watching this various things, and they're showing various scenes in places. And you see this one still, and you can see, you know, the sun in the background, kind of, you know, like it looks like it's dusk and so forth. And you see a city street, and you see a power line, and you see some shoes hanging from that power line. And when I saw that, I said, oh, I recognize that. And so, yeah, I did recognize that. And, you know, I state the concern about the organization. You'll find a lot of people will talk about how in movies and whatnot, something will be put in the movie and whatnot to basically make a statement. And sometimes it is, here's a hint. Sometimes it's, this is in your face, and we're going to mess with you, and you can't do anything about it. So I started to wonder. And as I was thinking about the organization, because I did do a little bit, not much, but a little bit of research into the organization that this, you know, the whole movie is based on. I'm thinking, okay, is there a problem here? Tim Ballard is the gentleman that is the main character of the movie, and he's a real person. He did indeed work, well, he described here, Tim, pardon me, Tim Ballard spent more than a decade working as a special agent for the Department of Homeland Security, where he was assigned to the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force and deployed as an undercover operative for the U.S. Child Sex Tourism Jump Team. Sounds, ooh, well, impressive. The government is doing something. You see, okay, you see in the trailer, And this is the line that really sunk in with me. In the trailer, you see the wife, his wife, stating, because he asks, "What do you do?" And she says, "You quit your job and you go and rescue those kids." What I saw in that is a wife standing behind her husband, do the difficult. This is set before you. Do it. And I feel encouraged by that. But unfortunately, I can't relate to it. I can't tell you how much that hurts. But so we have this organization, Operation Underground Railroad. That's what he formed. And if you look at the website, very artsy, craftsy, and so forth. There's a lot of stuff about their accomplishments, what they've done, and their interaction, for example, with local police forces and stuff. They talk about their statistics, the number of kids that they've been involved with, maybe rescued, the number of prosecutions they've been involved in, and things of that nature. If you know, and there is the comment about, was it in the trailer or it was somewhere where when you look at, I think his comment was that the sex trade or the it's considered, you know, an umbrella term, human trafficking, but you know, sex trade, organ harvesting, and all those kind of things. Because human trafficking implies a lot of other things. Human trafficking also includes what do they call them? It's not mules, or is it some other word? Anyway, the people that will get people from one place to another, across borders and things of that nature. Some of these people actually do that job. Some of these people abuse the people that they're supposedly customers of. But that's, you know, so, but this is a very large ecosystem and various things happen. And the statement was that it is now bigger than the arms industry, I think it was, and approaching the drug trade as, you know, total dollar amount. And you say, okay, well, here's a fancy statistic, and therefore, ooh, ah. You know, if it's a tiny business, but you're the person impacted, it's a big deal, isn't it? It does, you know, the numbers are the sensation. But see, in the drug trade, and this is, you know, if you study the drug trade, this is obvious. This is obvious. It's well known. It's well understood. If you want to be a large player in the drug trade, what you want to do is the idea of controlled opposition. You want to make sure those people who are supposedly your enemies, you control. So what you would do is you say, all right, I want to be in the drug business. So because there's a lot of money to be made, power and you know, sex and whatnot, there's a lot of drive for people to say, I want to be in this business. So what you would do is you would have both sides. You would be the party that brings the drugs into the marketplace and so forth, but you'd also be the party that controls the police force that regulates it. So what you'd want to do is make sure the laws are in place to say this is not a good thing, and we're going to set up this big organization to prevent this from happening, and you control that organization. So that organization has that facade of saying, look, we're protecting you from drugs, because it's a big problem. One of the reasons why it's a big problem, because we run the business. So the people involved in protecting you from the drug trade are the people bringing in the drugs. There was there's numerous of these, but, you know, the one that comes to mind is there's one guy, he's no longer with us, but he was, I think it was the, he worked, he was a cop in Los Angeles, and then he got into writing and things of that nature. But at the time, this was 80s, I think, maybe 90s, the director of the CIA went to have and had a, you know, one of these public meetings in Los Angeles, and there was a Q&A time, and he got up and said, "I am so and so, and I was a cop, and I have the evidence here of the CIA direct involvement in importing cocaine into California specifically." And obviously that caused a big stir and so forth, because he had the evidence. And, you know, the CIA is often referred to as the cocaine import agency, because their involvement in bringing cocaine in, their involvement with like MK Ultra, bringing it, distributing LSD, especially through, you know, Grateful Dead concerts, things of that nature. That was one of the things they did. Again, MK Ultra and all that, you know, this is government funded stuff. The importing heroin from Afghanistan, you know, and from Cambodia, specifically done in body bags, you know. Anyway, all the stuff. I mean, it's that continuous history, you know, and part of the issue was, what you can find too is that a lot of times the drug industry is used to say, we need to divide people. So one of the ways they would divide people is there was an effort to specifically separate the Hispanic community, and they did that with marijuana, because you know that wasn't the original popular term, but that's what became popular, and so there were some, and I'm a little vague on that, but then the other thing that was done is, everybody's using cocaine, but what we're going to do is we're going to go to the black community, and you have a specific version of cocaine that's right for you. It's the crack cocaine. And that was specifically targeted to the black community, because what you would do is you say, okay, well, you're black, therefore, this is the cocaine you want. You want crack. You don't want the white stuff that white people use. You want the crack, because that's what black people use. And what it did is fuel the division between white and black. It is part of that. And of course, expands the market. And then of course, and gives control. But anyway, the whole point of all this is, you know, if you look at the history of the drug industry, these are the things that are done. The people that are in control and the people that allegedly are, oh, the bad people, the same people. And one of the other things that you do is, in doing that, you have big drug cartel A and big drug cartel B, and then some small group, and you say, okay, here's a small group, let's go get them, because we don't want the competition. And cartel A has a problem with cartel B, and whoever has the better connection, those things get used. So again, this is easy to find if you research the drug trade. So why not the sex trade? Because of the sheer numbers that are involved, if you can build an organization and have the sensation and so forth that, look, we've helped hundreds or thousands. I think they talk about 6, 10, 15,000, whatever the number was, I forget, that we've helped. And it's kind of like, oh, wonderful. There's two sides of the coin here. One is, for those people that were helped, this is a big deal. This is a really intensely big deal. It is a remarkable blessing to them. And, you know, all for it. My concern is there's a strong tie to police forces and so forth. So to what degree is this absolutely 100% great, the right thing? Or is it controlled opposition? I don't know. I'm not going to try to make an accusation. Definitely not. Especially considering, if you're one of the kids that said, I used to be enslaved and now I'm free, Praise the Lord for them. I definitely don't want to go there. But again, the whole point of the ecosystem idea behind Shofar Leaks is because there are several possibilities. One is, it is indeed a false front. I mean, that's the worst case scenario. I hope it isn't. But there's that, I mean, it's on the table. I won't make an accusation. I can't point to specific evidence for that. So I won't make that accusation, but I will point out the fact that's on the table. That this is what you would do to say, all right, I want to give people the idea something's being done about this. Therefore, I don't have to be concerned because my state and this organization is protecting me. That's a possibility. The other thing, as mentioned in modern day slavery, is they are indeed full of people, even leadership and whatnot, striving to do this and to do it well. But there are people who enter the organization, be part of it, who are there to infiltrate, to compromise, to leak information, whatever it happens to be. So somehow they may be compromised, meaning the large, you know, and the related drug dealer kind of thing. He basically says, okay, we know what they're doing. They're going after this group over there. Okay, fine. That's not our group. Let them go after that so they can show some successes. But now they've caught one of us, or they see some, let's either change that information or let's somehow stop this, whatever it takes, because they're infiltrated. So the organization may be completely fine, but being infiltrated, they're compromised. And then there's the other thing. There's no compromise whatsoever in the organization. But because of the fact they're an organization, the opposition monitors them and does whatever they can to see what's happening, to know what's going on, so when there is a threat, they know, because the threat's coming from a single spot. It's not coming from all over. It's coming from a central place. Therefore, all you have to do is monitor them. And when you see, oh, they have discovered we are doing something over here. So what we may do is, let's say they've discovered that we have 100 slaves, the polite term, over here. What we're going to do is move 98 of them out and let them take two. So they can claim a success. Rah, rah. And we lose two. That's just the price of doing business. These are the things that happen with organizations. But there's a clue. And again, I don't know if this was, it's possible, just luck. Or it's possible it was done on purpose. Many years ago, there was a movie done called Wag the Dog. I've had the trailer on Kozlowski.org for some time because I found a delight in it, because what it did is it showed controlled opposition and all those kind of things in a comedic way. And of course, the expression wag the dog has been used a lot to discuss this when you see something happen and you say, okay, this is like the wag the dog story. In other words, it's just PR fluff in order to lead the populace, the normies as they're called, and give you the emotional stuff while you're being deceived. One of the ways they did this in the movie is, okay, there was the guy, and his name was Shu. And in order to build an emotional story around him, the main characters, what they did is they took some shoes, tied the strings together, and tossed them over the wires, in cities and whatnot, took a few pictures, and then had this happen all over the place in order to get the people to around the country to stand behind Shu. And so it became a marketing gimmick, because what you've done then is you do it a little bit. You do the camera work, you know, get the news coverage and whatnot, and then people will spontaneously do it themselves, and it becomes a phenomenon. Relative to that, it's a while back, Epstein didn't kill himself. When the supposed suicide by Jeffrey Epstein occurred, there was a number of people who said, well, no, there's a problem with this story. And so a few people said Epstein didn't kill himself. And, you know, what happened was then, I remember seeing, for example, a news reporter or a weatherman or things of that nature actually saying, you know, the weather today is, and by the way, Epstein didn't kill himself. I mean, people did this. And so, you know, obviously there were no connection, but it built an ecosystem. And that was the funny ha-ha for a while, talking about a relatively serious issue. That was the model we see in Wag the Dog with the shoes over the power lines. And then there's this still from the Sound of Freedom. And again, there's the possibility it just so happened to be. There's the possibility is those in the know are saying, we got you. We fooled you. Do those things happen? Oh, yes. I mean, if you study the movie industry, especially the history, the idea of, whatever it's called, I forget the various terms. So I don't know, but I want to put it on the table. Because I do know organizations are compromised. They're compromised because they're a false front. As this organization, whatever it is, in Australia, who keeps emailing me, I just got on their mailing list, you know, send us money kind of stuff. It's a false front because they're just trying to get people to get better ESG scores and look good, even though they make the slavery users look good. Because they're fighting slavery. They do nothing about it, but, you know, they make the PR. Is the movie, is the story, is this group, what's it called? Operation Underground Railroad. Is that indeed doing exactly what they say solely, or is it a false front? I don't know, but I think it's wise to have both your eyes, both options on the table, because if you are a false front. Well-funded false front, you would have the fancy pages. You do the movie. You get the rah-rah behind you, because then the other smaller players trying to do this are drowned out. It could be, and then again, indeed, there are going to be people that they are going to indeed pluck out. But what may happen is possibly, and just picking numbers out of the air, it could be that you have this organization, they do indeed rescue people, but because of the fact they're an organization, they may rescue, let's say, 1% of the marketplace. Whereas if it was not an organization, but either a bunch of small organizations or no organization at all, you may rescue 2%, 5%, 10% or more. I don't know. And that's the issue. If you want to keep control, You need to have, well, again, it goes back to Facebook and Google. You want to have control. Why? What do you do? Well, you know, take the obvious thing. Gmail, it's free. YouTube, it's free. No, it isn't. You're the product. And they destroy the market and they control you. I don't know. Are we getting people to say, oh, here's a problem and here's a group that is truly trying to help? Or is this Wag the Dog? I don't know. But see, I'm willing to ask the question. And that's going to get me in trouble, isn't it? You don't question them. Look at all the good they're doing. You don't question the institutional church. Look at all the good they're doing. What's the difference? Told you. Well, okay. One last thing. I need to put the link in through them. A while back, because I mentioned this, a while back, I wrote an article, Are the Holes in Tor Intentional? And as I've stated before, because of the fact that I got a response from the head of Tor indirectly, I said, okay, they know me. I mean, this is the U.S. intelligence community. They now know me. And I said, okay, I'm not ready. I'm not prepared and whatnot. I'm just going to kind of be silent for a while because I'm just not ready. I've obviously tapped into some other areas, such as the sex trade. Oh, this is fun. And I'm not going to compromise anymore. I'm going to point it out. I'm going to ask the question, is the Sound of Freedom Wag the Dog? I'll ask that question. Is the Sound of Freedom an organization that is truly doing noble things completely? I don't know. But again, I'm willing to ask the question. In my email, I did point out roughly the same time I wrote that article. I think it was a little before, a little after, I don't remember. I was dealing with a gentleman who was interested in what I was doing, including bringing money to the table. He looked into what I was doing, and he says, no, I'm going to end this. And I ask him why. And again, as I wrote, I really appreciate the fact that he was willing to give me an answer. The direct quote, you're on the wrong side of the NSA. That man ran in fear because the state is too strong. I'm sorry. My Lord is in charge, not the state. My fear is not the fear of man, but the fear of the Lord. I will blunder, make mistakes, goof, and there's a bit of sin in my life. But I can't deny the Lord's commands, including the command to, well, one of the things I did study today. Because early in my pro-life work is a often quoted passage from Proverbs 24, verse 10. Well, what's usually quoted is 11 and 12. Rescue those who are being taken away to death. Hold back those who are stumbling to the slaughter. If you say, behold, we did not know this. Does not he who weighs the heart perceive it? Does not he who keeps watch over your soul know it? And will he not repay man according to his work? It's kind of like if you say, well, I don't want to be involved and I'm going to keep quiet. And, hey, I didn't know. But what also got to me, because those are the verses that the pro-life community would constantly quote. There's a verse before, verse 10. If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. Be watchful. Stand firm in the faith. Be strong. Act like men. Let all that you do be done in love. 1 Corinthians 16, 13, is that right? 1 Corinthians 16. If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. You're not being strong. You're not acting like a man. Also translated as courageous. I got long again. This is not a game. One of the things in the modern day slavery video, as I've used in several other videos, a particular girl in the Ivory Coast, and I'll put that photo up too. She gets to me, and the question, of course, is why? What you see is this young girl, and there's two things to note about her. She's, you know, wearing kind of a, you know, she's a really young girl. She's wearing a dress, and around her arm, she has a little bracelet. What I see in that bracelet is, even in those circumstances, she's a girl. There was a feminine characteristic. She's a girl. But there's another thing I saw. If you look at the dress, it has a strap on the back, but it's untied. If her mom was there, moms will typically say, "Let me tie that." And what I saw in that is a symbol, is the mom isn't there, because that girl's a slave. Moms love their kids. And those little things are taken care of. It's one of the vital aspects, one of the great joys of for a child to have a mom. Dads don't do that as well. Moms do. And that girl didn't have a mom around, did she? Those are the things that I caught. Families are wonderful things. Destroy them is horrible. Destroying families is horrible. Mr. Cross, Mr. Bitterman, Mr. Keynes. I'm not a fluffy fellow. I'm a follower of the Lord Jesus Christ. My lady, my wife, I love you and I want you back.